This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, everybody. You're about to hear the live recording that we did for a send-off for Casper. We did it by doing an episode about book one, chapter one, through the theme of transitions. And this event was in partnership with Sixth and I in Washington, D.C., a center for arts, entertainment, and ideas, and a synagogue that reimagines how religion and community can enhance people's everyday lives.
This is not your typical episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, because we had our wonderful new co-host, Matt, come and tell a story. There were lots of goodbyes and I love yous, and it was emotional and technically a little challenging here and there. But more than 1,500 of you showed up, which just meant the world to me. And I...
From 42 states...
And 22 countries.
I didn't know there were that many states or countries.
At least not the people who were so sweet and wonderful.
People stayed up till 1 in the morning their time in order to tune in. I mean, like, it was amazing.
Thank you so much for everything over these last 5 years. It has been a truly magical experience, and I'm going to be back so soon as a guest on the show, so get ready.
We won't let you miss him for long. And Casper, yeah. I love you.
I love you too.
Enjoy the show.
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Chapter 1. The Boy Who Lived. Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive were proud to say that they were perfectly normal, thank you very much. They were the last people you'd expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious, because they just didn't hold with such nonsense.
I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And I'm Casper Ter Kyle.
And this is Casper's last episode as co-host on Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Welcome, everyone. We're so, so glad that you're with us. Thank you for being here. Thanks for staying with us for a little extra time. We just wanted you all to get to know each other, and I was desperately trying to avoid saying goodbye.
It's so manipulative.
I know, right?
We called Zoom and we're like, crash.
Shut it down. Shut it down. Now, we are here in Boston, and I want to acknowledge that we're on Native Chappaquiddick, Wampanoag, and Nipmuc land, and that the folks at Sixth and I are in Washington, D.C., on Piscataway land, and we honor the Native people who have been the traditional custodians of this land and continue to be our hosts. So, yes, we're talking about transitions, and Vanessa, I believe it's your turn to tell a story.
It's always my turn at live shows to tell a story, because I take direction from Ariana better than Casper does. So
I bake cakes once every 5 years. What are you going to do?
Yeah, you give and I give. So I am going to tell you a story about 15, 16-year-old Vanessa. She was like pretty different than current me, I think. She was quiet.
What?
I know. Especially at school. I was such a good kid that I had pink hair, which we were not allowed to have. You had to have natural colored hair. But there was only one like teacher at school, Miss Huckel, who cared if you didn't have naturally colored hair. So like all you had to do was avoid her. And I would. And then every once in a while she'd catch me and be like, Zoltan, pink hair, detention. And I just wouldn't go. And no other teacher would enforce it because I was like such a like quiet, sweet kid. Beginning of 11th grade, it's like the third day of school. We're in homeroom. I'm sitting. I'm not talking to anyone. Maybe I'm talking to my friend Katie, who's sitting in front of me. And class is like getting settled. And there's a knock on the door. And this guy comes in. And his name wasn't Troy, but his name was Troy. You know, like he's a
Frosted
Troy.
Frosted Tips.
Yes, yeah. Frosted Tips. And my teacher was Mr. Kuransky, and Troy walks in and he goes, Mr. Kuransky, it's so good to see you. I've missed you. Troy had graduated the previous spring. I had seen Mr. Kuransky for like one more day sooner than Troy. And I sat there and I said very quietly to Katie, give us a chance to miss you first, dude. Except that it was one of those moments room where just like the music that wasn't even on turned off, like it just became silent. And like, I didn't know that like Valley girl me was capable of even hurting the feelings of a guy from Malibu, but it turns out that I was, because Troy went like ashen faced. And I was like, it was mean, but it was true. Like, you haven't even started college yet. You can't come back. Like, you just had graduation. You just had the big transition. Go transition. Like, go transit.
Yeah.
Right? And I was just thinking about that because we're throwing this, right? Like, and we've had sort of like a lot of goodbyes. And I'm feeling like, but don't transit, right? Like, it doesn't feel over in those big ways. And so it turns out I was wrong about Troy. Transitions, you can like have rituals around transitions, and that doesn't mean that they feel complete, right? Sometimes, I know for me, I felt graduated from high school months, if not years, before I graduated from high school. And like Troy didn't feel that way even after he graduated from high school. And so, and I, you know, we see that in this chapter, right? Where it seems to me that there's a lot of denial about the fact that like Lily and James just died, right? Yeah. Like that is something that is going to hit McGonagall and Hagrid and Dumbledore over and over again, right? These transitions, we feel like they're supposed to be quick and they're not.
Mm.
So don't ever leave me.
Mm. Yeah. So often we want to make something like a complete thing, and then there's wrapping a bow on it with like a fun live show.
Right.
And actually it will linger, or it already feels like it's done. Like it doesn't happen in a single moment. That's what I'm really hearing from your story. It's a process, and wherever you tie the bow, it's going to be part of it, but not the whole transition.
Right.
Yeah.
Troy probably goes back every year.
Mr. Kuransky is so happy to see him.
He's like, Troy again. Great.
Well, let's remind everyone what happens in this chapter, because it's really an underread chapter. People don't often understand what's happening this point in the book.
On the deeper level.
So we're going to continue our tradition of 30-second recaps. And Vanessa, 30 seconds on the clock, Vanessa, remind us what happens in chapter one of book one. 3, 2, 1. Go.
Hermione is not in this chapter. So Mr. and Mrs. Dursley have like a fussy kid. Mr. Dursley is going to work. He works in drills. He is like, oh my gosh, all this weird stuff is happening. And do I hear the name Harry Potter? And then McGonagall and Dumbledore have a little meeting, and Hagrid comes with a baby, and Dumbledore's like, I'm just going to leave a note. And McGonagall's like, that makes sense. Leave a baby and a note. Everything will probably be fine. People are celebrating because Voldemort is dead, and everybody is cheersing in the middle of the night to the boy who lived. There's no Hermione.
Wow. That was very strong.
Thank you. Are you ready to do your very last 30-second recap as a co-host of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text?
I know.
I keep saying as a co-host because he's going to come back as a guest. This is my way of making it true.
Just like there's no Hermione, I'm very sad there's no Polyakov, but there is someone else.
Oh, okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
On your mark. Get set, go.
Hello, I'm Valerie Marchbanks, and I'm the new CEO of Grunnings Limited, and I can't wait to drill into this new job. I've been reviewing the personnel files, and I've come up to a name here. Yes, Vernon Dursley. He's to not be a very imaginative employee, and he has really got some behavioral issues. I'm on the 10th floor, just the floor above him, and I can hear the shouting. His secretary has reported him multiple times, so I've put night goggle cameras on his house, and I can't tell you what's happening.
So we are now going to have you vote as to who did a better job at this 30-second recap. Ariana, remind me of the options. They are, Vanessa should give it to Casper because it's his last show, or no, Casper actually won. Or it's not about winning or losing. It's about the friends you made along the way. I hope that you guys are voting for Casper because that was a really good bit.
Vanessa absolutely deserved that one, but I still want you to vote for me because I can't bake another cake with this heart condition.
He doesn't have a heart condition. He just gets very nervous baking.
So nervous.
It was very emotional. Okay, Ariana, how's the voting going? I have a crown.
Vanessa, we should give it to Casper.
Repeat it. Oh, sorry. It was Vanessa won, but we should give it to Casper. I really thought you would.
It was the right option. I appreciate you, everyone. Oh, wow.
Let's have a theme conversation.
Let's do it.
So we're talking about book one, chapter one, through this theme of transitions.
Yeah, the thing that really struck me this time more than anything is that what we're seeing is a whole society emerge from lockdown.
Yeah.
We have endured just over a year at this point of really being locked down. And here we see people after 11 years of living in fear, maybe literally hiding.
Yeah.
And they are out at 8:30 in the morning as Vernon is driving on the edge of town. He's seeing groups of people gathered in late October, early November. So it's cold. They are gathered together and literally like rejoicing. I mean, one of them says, "Rejoice, for you know who has gone at last." Like, look at me in July, please goodness. You know, like if all goes well and everyone is vaccinated, I'll be like, "COVID, it's gone at last."
Rejoice.
So I just saw that parallel so strongly, and understanding this not necessarily carefree attitude, because you still see people negotiating what is appropriate. There's rumors flying around, like, what happened to the Potters? How did Voldemort disappear? And they're whispering. So there's still this sense of like, can we really, is it okay? Like, there's this sense of freedom and then this sense of like, but is it really safe? So that was my big theme of seeing people transition, from this time of lockdown into this time of freedom.
I mean, even at the very end, right? They're cheersing quietly, right?
Yeah.
It's this like,
right, lifting a glass.
Yeah. Ugh. I feel like every text I get from a friend or loved one saying I got my vaccine, right? It's like one more. There's just like this momentum to it.
I literally check the New York Times numbers every morning and I'm like, okay, great. That means predicted date for, 90% is.
Yeah. I was struck by the fact that by the time Petunia finds Harry the following morning after Harry gets dropped off, her sister's been dead for 36 hours. Mm. And I was just thinking about the times where your life has changed, but you don't know that it's changed yet. And it can be for any number of reasons, right? I found out that I got rejected from grad school by like calling and being like, I still haven't gotten my email. And they were like, yes, it's in spam. Like I found it in spam. And it turns out that for like a week, I had been rejected from this school and I didn't know that I'd been rejected, right? It's like our lives, some version of reality can be on a path without our knowing it. And it just made me wonder if that matters. Because for Petunia, the moment that she finds out her sister is dead is that morning. And I just wonder if it adds to her hurt that she didn't know when it happened, right? I sometimes find myself getting jealous, like if a friend is engaged but got engaged like 2 months ago. And I'm like, why wasn't I on the list of people you called? And then, of course, I like, no, that's ridiculous. But I can imagine Petunia feeling like my sister died and like no one thought to tell me.
Yeah.
And so I was just thinking about that you can transition from having a sister to not, and like not even know.
Yeah. And I mean, on a humorous note, I saw that everyone is using owls to let each other know, or like they're communing via owls. I was like, why aren't people disapparating? Like, surely that would be easier. But I'm like, well, I guess if everyone was disapparating, no one would be home to disapparate to. So the owls are like the length of flight to get from one place to another is another example of that kind of like transition time that some people hear it sooner than others. And there's also all of these like micro transitions on an individual level as this big transition is happening. happening.
Yeah.
Like we see McGonagall use for the first time, at least in a long time, she says the word Voldemort. And it's this big moment where it feels like she's reclaiming some of her power or some of her confidence in some way, having, you know, been afraid of that word. And so I guess it's also a way of thinking like that big shift is actually made up of all these tiny little shifts that's happening with each of us, right? Each person getting a vaccine contributes to greater safety for everyone.
The other person I also want to talk about is McGonagall, because it feels like she does have this moment. I know I joked about it in my 30-second recap, but she has this moment with Dumbledore where she says, like, you can't explain all of this in a note.
Right.
And I always read it as like, you can't explain all this in a note. And now I'm like, no, she's like, you idiot. You can't explain all of this in a note.
Right.
And it feels like she wants a bigger deal. She's like, we need a ritual. We need to sit down and have a cup of tea and talk about this and talk about what this means and have like a formal adoption ceremony.
Well, and she doesn't even want them to be the transition.
Right. Right. She's like, they're the wrong people, but fine if we have to do these people, but like, we got to do, we got to create a ritual because rituals are very powerful. Power of Ritual by Casper Trakiel out now. But really, like she's like, we need to make a bigger deal out of this than a note. And Dumbledore is like, no, this is how I communicate that it annoyed me that you left the toilet seat up. And this is how I also tell people that they now have to take care of their dead sister's baby. Same method.
To me, it indicates he's not been in a long-term relationship for a long time because the communication skills are not so strong.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just love that McGonagall is like, no, this is a huge transition. We have to do something.
Yeah. We have to honor it. Right. And I think that's what she's trying to point to. It's like, transitions don't just, I mean, they can just happen, but then we get left behind. Like we need to mark the moment in some way, even if it's an incomplete ribbon, right? In some way, mark that moment to step into it as best we can.
Yeah. It feels like Hagrid is holding so much of that space. Yeah. He's like the only one weeping for James. And I mean, McGonagall like wipes a tear, but
yeah.
And he's so sad dropping off Harry. And it even feels like this like motorcycle is some sort of like ritualistic thing where he's received it. Now he's going to return it.
Oh my gosh. I'm just seeing, we always talk about Hagrid as this maternal figure, right? Like this loving, caring, constant presence for Harry. And I'm suddenly realizing he arrives on Sirius's motorbike, who is kind of like this stand-in father figure as godfather. So there's this like echo of a particular type of parentage, at least in that moment as they arrive, like this kind of family unit.
Yeah.
I had not seen that before.
Well, and this is like not an attempt to sell merch, but we made Hagrid our patron saint of transitions. And we did that, right? Like he's the one who brings Harry into the wizarding world, right? He like goes on a boat out to an island to get him, right? Like he will do anything to bring Harry into the wizarding world. We see him here bringing Harry out of the wizarding world. He brings every child for the first time into Hogwarts. He's this like great accompanier on transitions. And I feel like that is because he's somebody who's like willing to cry and willing to be sad with people and willing to celebrate, right? He shows up with a cake. He's like so good at transitions. Yeah. He's like, this is a big deal. You're a wizard. It's your birthday. We need a cake. Right?
I could learn from him.
Whereas Dumbledore would be like, hey, kid, come with me.
Please sign this document. Yeah,
gotta go.
You're my tool to destroy evil.
To be clear, I want to say that, like, I am more Dumbledore than Hagrid. Like, people have been messaging me very sweetly.
That's why we're so harsh on him. Because I think we see us, honestly, I think that's because we're like, oh, I don't like that in me.
Right.
And I'm the same, right? Like, it's so easy to think of people as useful to you in some way rather than the way that Hagrid sees them, right? He looks at each individual creature in his care and falls in love with them.
Right.
And all I see is like, this is a fire hazard. Get it out of the school. You know what I mean?
I just, as people have been like messaging me and asking me, they're like, are you going to miss Casper? And I'm like, we are literally still recording from 9 to 11 on Friday mornings. Like, no, I'm not going to miss him. And like, that's not fair, right? And I think that that's me like not dealing with my own transitions, right? I don't think that people are wrong. I think that I'm like, no, everything's fine. Just leave a note.
Just leave a note.
Everything will be fine.
Well, let's see if there's more that we can find in this chapter, because it's time for our first sacred practice.
Casper, I need your help picking a sentence, because we are going to do Lectio Divina.
My favorite.
So Lectio Divina, taught to us by Stephanie Paulsell, who is here tonight. Hi, Stephanie and Amanda. Stephanie taught us how to do Lectio. It's what we did in our very first episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. And it is a four-step sacred reading practice. It dates back to the Middle Ages. It's a monastic practice. And the way that Stephanie has been explaining it lately, she like always has new insights in how she explains it, that it's like lowering a ladder into the text. Mm. And in each of these four stages, which I'll walk you through, we're going to get deeper and deeper into the text. Mm. So Casper, I need you to pick a number between 1 and 17.
I'd like 15, please.
15. Interesting. Okay, we have about 10 paragraphs on this page. Please pick a number between 1 and 10.
I'm going to go for number 1.
Okay. No problems, were there?
Whoa. That's it?
Yeah.
No problems, were there?
So do you want me to do step 1 since I have the book?
I can have a guess.
Okay, so step 1 of Lectio Divina, we talk about what is literally happening in the chapter. And this is no problems, were there?
I think this is McGonagall. Maybe it's Dumbledore asking Hagrid if there was any challenge in bringing Harry safely to number 4 Privet Drive.
It's Dumbledore, but yes. Borrowed at Professor Dumbledore, young Sirius Black. No problems, were there? So step 2 of Lectio Divina is allegory. And we ask ourselves what other stories this sentence reminds us of. What other songs, myths, Shakespeare plays, you know, does this remind us of? No problems, were there?
There's just like a laid back vibe that I'm getting. It's just like a little slow, you know, slow beat. What else am I thinking? I'm thinking about like stressed kitchens when like there's an order that's gone wrong and like, I don't know. So I just remember working in a kitchen and like things happening so, so quickly. And so when something went wrong, you know, someone would be like, is there a problem? And you're like, no.
Right. I didn't drop a carton of eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's fine. Oh, look over there.
No problems, were there? Is that the phrase?
Yes. Can I tell you what I'm thinking of? So I'm thinking of, first of all, I'm thinking of Shakespeare plays where like everybody is confusing who everybody is, or like an Oscar Wilde play, Importance of Being Earnest, right? Where like you think you're talking to one person, but you're actually talking to another.
Yes.
And those plays always really stress me out because I just want to jump on stage and be like, get it? You're actually named Earnest and the rest of you are talking about sincerity. Everyone get it? And just how like I want to just solve it. But it's like there are no real problems and yet there's so many miscommunications. Mm. So that's a literal like no problems.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about, there was a great movie in the 80s called License to Drive.
I've never heard of it.
It's not good.
Oh.
It's amazing though. And anyway, I don't even remember much of the plot. Like basically he's out all night in someone's car and it's not his car. And it's like it's a disaster of a night. And in the morning he arrives with the car and it's basically like someone's like, everything go okay? And he's like, yeah, no problem. Mm. Even like the whole movie has been about nothing but problems. Mm. So I feel like we often say no problem when there were actually a ton of problems.
Yeah. I'm suddenly also thinking about all of the times those words might have been said as people who've been looking out for Harry at different points through the books are reporting back to base. Mm-hmm. You know,
Mrs. Fig.
Exactly. I'm thinking about Mrs. Fig reporting back, you know, at the end of every
day. She probably is moving in on Privet Drive this night.
That's exactly.
This very night.
Right. That's why he did the put outer, because like someone is moving in under cover of darkness.
Oh my God, I love it.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. He actually built a whole house, magicked in a whole new number 7. No one ever noticed. But also just like thinking about the Order of the Phoenix and the way in which, you know, we hear about Mundungus and the frustration of everyone that has with him, but everyone else is clearly reporting for duty and being very clear about, were there any issues tonight? No, there was no problem. So just the way that Harry is always surrounded by this question and that response of sometimes there's a problem, sometimes there isn't.
Yeah. Well, the next step is what it reminds you of in your own life. And please feel free to put yours in the chat. I'll read the sentence again. No problems, were there? Casper, take a moment, but what does this remind you of in your own life?
I'm not a parent, but this feels like the kind of question I was asked when I was a babysitter and the parents of the kids that I babysat would come home. And usually the answer was no problem. But one night, Stephen, who was 7, had an anaphylactic shock. And all I knew was that I had to take this thing and yank it in his thigh and push it down. Like I was 14 or 15. And like, that was the most terrifying moment. So when they came home and said, no, any problems, were there?
Yes, I had to use an EpiPen and stab your child.
And then they were like, here's $30. I was like,
There isn't enough money in the world.
Never want to do that again. So yeah, I guess sometimes the question is asked of you when you're not really resourced to be able to solve it if there was a problem.
Right.
So just the challenging situation. Yeah, that's one that I'm immediately taken back to. I loved little Stephen. He and his sister were so fun.
Well, he's alive because of you.
We should be in touch.
Yes. Stephen, if you're writing, if you're here tonight, send him an extra 10 quid. 30?
I don't need the money. Just tell me you're okay. Yeah. How about you, love? What does it remind you of in your God, life?
Nothing is occurring to me.
Can I read it for you?
Yes.
No problems, were there?
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, the day I moved into this very house, I lived in the dorms, and my door, as Ariana and Casper, I'm sure remember, the fire alarm would go off every time you, like, touched the door wrong. And so, like, every time I hired movers, and they were wonderful, except they kept hitting this alarm, and then I would get a call being like, the alarm's going off. I was like, I know. And just, like, how overwhelming that moment was. Mm-hmm. Again, like, there was no problem, right? Like, it was a privilege to live where I had lived. It was exciting to be moving where I was moving. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to be able to afford movers for the first time in my life. Like, there were no problems, but it was just, like, this hellscape of problems. Yeah. And so it just feels like there are two different kinds of problems. There's, like, the chaos annoying ones.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you have a real problem, you're like, that was cute.
That wasn't a problem.
That was not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's funny, actually, because just to take it back to the text, of course, I mean, his parents just were killed. You know, like, there were problems.
Right. It's no problem. And then he says, the house was almost destroyed, but I got him out before the muggles started swarming. And I'm like, how long was this child left alone with dead bodies? I know. No problem. Yeah, just a couple murdered people.
Yeah, it's a problem.
And that's not how Hagrid is saying it. But it's like, I know. It's a huge problem. Yeah. It's a huge problem. So the last stage is, what does this remind you of? Nope, sorry. It's, what do you feel called to do?
Yeah.
No problems, were there? Part of me feels called to start being more honest. Like, yes, I have problems. It's raining and I'm moving. But I think I want to go the other way of, like, unless it's a real problem.
Yeah.
Be like, no, there are no problems. Ariana and I have been talking about this. And by that, I mean, I've been talking to Ariana about it. I've noticed I'd like to blame COVID, but I am so irritable these days. Like, small things, I'll be like, that was horrible. Mm. And I just want to, like, remember that, like, these things are not real problems. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, everyone. I'm getting a therapist. Everything will be fine.
Oh, we've all needed extra help this year. My God.
What about you, love? What do you feel, Chart?
Will you read it once more?
No problems, were there?
Suddenly noticing the question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe because of this year, we have all experienced such difficulties. I'm kind of expecting that I understand people's context just because I've experienced COVID. And I heard it said best that we're not all in the same boat, but we are all in the same storm. And I think I want to lean into the questions of maybe not asking, like, no problems were there, but like, how are you, like, really, you know, because we are all having different experiences. And I just keep thinking about all my friends who have young kids and just the untold challenge, or very told, but, you know, not always public challenge that folks are facing with extra caring responsibilities and everything else. So I think I want to lean into asking that question, really.
Right. Yeah. Not with the assumption, no problems, were there?
Right.
But like, were there any problems?
Are there problems?
Right.
Yeah,
that's beautiful.
Oh, I love Lectio.
That was your last Lectio as a co-host.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Honestly, it is my favorite practice.
But we are now being joined by Matt Potts.
Our fabulous friend and future co-host of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, the Reverend Doctor Matthew Potts. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
So Matt is going to be the person who is replacing Casper. Of course, Casper cannot be replaced, but I'm very excited to go on this journey with you, Matt. It will be a very different journey. It will be a much sadder journey because Matt and I both like sad things.
But also a much wiser one, because Matt is just an incredible teacher. I will say much more about that in just a moment, because I'm going to hand over formally, Matt, to you in just a moment after your story. But let's hear from you as you share a little insight into your own experience of transitions.
So 20 years ago, about 20 years ago this spring, I gave my father a silver dollar. And it's a silver dollar he still has, and it's a silver dollar he carries around with him to this day. And to understand why I gave him a silver dollar, I need to back up a little bit. So for as long as I can remember growing up, I wanted basically two things out of my life. The first thing I wanted was to be in the Navy. And I wanted to be in the Navy partly because my dad was in the Navy, my grandfather was in the Navy, and my dad was in the Navy Reserves growing up. And I would see him coming home on reserve weekends in his uniform. And I was always really just proud of my dad for his service. And I wanted to be like him. And the other reason I wanted to be in the Navy is because, let's be honest, in fourth grade, I saw the movie Top Gun and I kind of had a crush on Tom Cruise, right? So I wanted to be in the Navy. The other thing that was part of me as long as I can remember is, I've been trying to think of a better way to phrase this, is this is going to sound kind of sappy and weird, but I wanted to follow Jesus. I just felt like I wanted to live up to the teachings of Jesus, right? I don't know why I had this sense of devotion or whatever it was, but those were the two things that were really important to me for as long as I can remember, being in the Navy and being in the church. And you have to understand, growing up in the place I grew up, in the world I grew up in, American military power sat really easily next to Christian life. And I didn't really analyze that in any serious way. So I went to college on a Navy ROTC scholarship. I went to a Catholic college and a Navy ROTC scholarship. And I graduated about 20 years ago this spring. And when I graduated, I was commissioned an officer in the United States Navy. Now, there's a tradition in the Navy that when you're an officer, the first person who salutes you, you give them a silver dollar. Now, the way it worked is that the day I graduated, I immediately outranked my dad. My dad, who had spent 20 years in the Navy and retired, was an enlisted man. And so I outranked him the day I graduated. And so at my commissioning, they finished the oath or whatever, and he turned to me and he saluted me and I saluted him back and I took a silver dollar out of my pocket and I flipped over to him. And as I said, he still carries that coin around with him. And then I went out to the fleet. I went out to a ship and things changed. This is a story about transition, right? Things changed for me in pretty dramatic ways. I went to a ship called USS Vincennes, which has since been decommissioned. Some of you, if you know your history very well, might know the USS Vincennes. In 1989, the USS Vincennes mistakenly shot down a Iranian civilian airliner and killed almost 300 innocent people. I was not on the ship at that time, but this is the ship that I arrived on to serve. And that was jarring to me. The other thing that happened, maybe appropriately for this podcast, during the time that I first arrived on the ship, I was reading a lot. I was very lonely and it was hard life at sea. And I was just reading a lot of fiction and memoir. And that thing that earlier in my life had those two things that sat so easily together, the idea of American military might and divine sanction, those things started to come into conflict in my heart and in my mind. And within about 6 months less, a few months of being on the ship, I realized that I changed, that I could not in good conscience serve in the Navy. I felt like my own Christian commitments trump that. And I think to the people around me, this looked like a big change. I was like, in high school and stuff, I was like super gung-ho. I used to watch Vietnam War movies. I used to like, and take exactly the wrong lesson from those Vietnam War movies. Like, I was like super gung-ho. All I wanted to do was serve. And I got to the fleet and everything changed. And I decided to try to get out of the Navy as a conscientious objector. And it was a very long process. There were hearings and my peers on the ship were not super happy with me. And then my captain on the ship was very unhappy with me. And in fact, part of my application process to the Navy for conscientious objector status is I had to prove to them that I had changed, that I took my oath in good faith. And then after I took my oath, that something in me changed. And I had to tell them what changed and how it changed in the exact moment, in fact, that the change happened. And it was a really stressful time, but I have to tell you, like, I cared about the opinions of my peers and the captain on the ship a lot less than I cared about the opinion of my dad. And I eventually did get out of the Navy, and the Navy sent me home and they sent me a bill for my college education. And I went home to Michigan and I was talking to my mom and I said to my mom, you know, I'm glad I'm out, but I'm really sad that I let dad down. And my mom said, don't move. And she ran, my dad was working in the office downstairs, and she ran and got my dad and she called my dad upstairs. And she said to me, now you tell him what you just told me. And I said, I'm sorry I let you down, dad. And he said, Matthew, you didn't let me down. He said, I'm proud of you. He said, I don't agree with what you did, but what I'm most worried about is that you would stay in for my sake. And then 20 years from now, you might wake up and not like yourself very much. He said, I'm proud you did what you thought was right. And I'm proud you're my son. You know, I'm getting a little misty. I meant a lot to me. And it occurs to me, you know, when Vanessa and Casper asked me to tell the story, that it is 20 years from then now. I think that the thing about transitions with the story is that, you know, when I was going through that, it felt like a big change. And everyone around me told me it was a big change. But inside myself, it didn't feel like I was becoming someone else. It felt like I was becoming who I was meant to be. It didn't feel like I was actually transforming into something different. It felt like I was transforming into myself, right? And why I'm so grateful for my father is that he knew that as soon as I got home. He knew that already, before even I did, which is why he wasn't sad or sorry that I made the decision that I made, why he was the opposite, why he was proud, and why he still carries that silver dollar around with him every day. So that's my transition story.
It's a really beautiful story.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Matt, I love the way that you said that sense that it didn't feel like you were changing, but it felt like everyone else saw you and saw change. But what you felt, what you saw in yourself, was really a becoming, like a becoming more of who you were and who you could become. More of who you felt called to be. And that's such a beautiful way to think about, how we can think differently about transitions. Yes, it might be a goodbye to a previous life or a previous way of being, but actually it's about a yes to something more. Obviously not every transition, but the ones where we have a sense of like, oh, I'm going that direction, that it's not just from one state to another, but it's actually from less to more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think another way that I might describe it was like, you know, I was always the person searching to try to figure out what I was supposed to be doing. And that didn't change about me, right? That somehow became truer about myself as I made my way through this journey. And I had to make some difficult decisions. And as I had to, frankly, walk back on some commitments and potentially disappoint some people and also like negotiate, like, you know, I'm still proud of my dad who served for many years. And the guys I served with in the Navy are some of the best people I've ever known, right? And I had to come to a more complicated relationship with my feelings about myself and about all these questions. And I think that the kind of through line through all this was, I mean, outwardly, you know, my title or my role, those things changed. Am I a naval officer? Am I a conscientious objector? But internally, it felt at every step like I'm trying to be a guy doing the right thing. I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to do. And because that didn't change, it didn't. I mean, of course, there was all kinds of transition and my life was turned upside down in many ways, but it felt like a straight path. It didn't feel like I was wandering and lost or something, even though it was, you know, very difficult and trying at times.
The other thing that your story is making me think of in light of, and I think we can transition to, I didn't mean to do that, to a conversation between passing the baton between the two of you, but is that in transitioning, you often leave people behind, right? Sometimes it's really hard, right? It's, I have to go. I do not belong on this ship, but I don't like the part of me that's leaving you behind. I don't like the part of this dynamic or this situation that's leaving you behind. Yeah. This is like a real passing of the batons moment.
It is a moment. And, you know, Matt, I want everyone to know, first of all, that you were exactly the first person that both Vanessa and I and Ariana thought of.
It was Ariana's idea.
It was Ariana's idea. But when I thought about it for myself, I was like, Matt. And so you're the only one. And well, I don't want to say the only one makes you sound like not the first choice. But like, I'm so glad it's you is what I'm trying to say. Because for so many reasons, which I will say in a moment. But like, I want you to know and I want everyone to know that it's you that we want. And I'm so glad that it's you that we have stepping into the co-host role.
I feel like you're proposing.
I wrote down things, so I'm going to be very serious because, Matt, you helped shape this podcast from the very beginning in many, many conversations. And so this is not you stepping into a new landscape or a new team, it's you becoming more of this team that you've already been part of and of this community. You've been a guest on the show many times, and you've been a dear friend and
spoken at live shows,
and you've been a dear friend and advisor for us. I mean, even before Harry Potter and the Sacred Text came along, Matt was my kind of project advisor as a faculty member of the Divinity School in a little podcast project I did way before even Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. So you have been intertwined with our creativity from the beginning.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah.
The podcast was Matt's idea.
From the beginning, when we were running the local group, Matt was like, this would probably work well as a podcast. I'm also really excited for everyone who listens to the show to, I mean, as you said, you're a veteran, like you're a minister in the Episcopal Church. You have a great knowledge of Buddhism. You have Japanese ancestry. You're a Ravenclaw. Like, you are bringing so many new...
You're
the worst. No, but like so many new stories and so many new perspectives and reference points and places of inspiration and insight that is important to keep the text alive, but also to keep our community alive, to hear new things. And the way that you're going to read the books together is differently from the way that we've read it together. And that's what will keep the text sacred for me. And I'm going to be listening every week. Don't you worry about it. Because you're a Ravenclaw, Matt, I'm going to ask Vanessa to pass this on to you, but I have just a little copy of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone in a Ravenclaw edition for you that you can annotate and read carefully and write lots of notes in. And so let this be the metaphorical baton that I hand over to you through the power of Zoom through Vanessa for you to receive. And just know that I wish for you the same joy that I've experienced in being a co-host of this show, of deepening your friendship with Vanessa, of discovering more about yourself and the world through these books, and that you will experience the same warmth and love and generosity from our community as I've experienced. So I'm so glad it's you. Thank you for saying yes. And I am so happy and grateful and sending you all my love.
That really did end like a proposal.
Do you say yes?
Yes. Yes, I will. Yes. The thing that I hope to carry on from you that isn't like my instinct, you know, Vanessa joked about it before, like I like to turn to the sad and the dark because I take for granted that good things are holy. I want to say, see, where is the holy in the difficult thing, right? But what that also means is I take for granted that good things are holy. Sometimes I don't pay enough attention to the joy and to the magic and to the loveliness. And what you do so well is always call our attention back to goodness and to beauty and to magic and to enchantment. Like an instinct or intuition, you just see it in the world around you. You have a vision of the world. That's what I hope to carry forward from your work with the podcast and my work with the podcast to come.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you, tomorrow.
Good luck, my friend.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
It is now time for blessings. We're now going to ask Ariana to come back on stage and offer a blessing. But before we do, I just want to speak on behalf of both of us, and I know you'll share more, but that we want to offer a blessing for Ariana. When she met us I don't think she knew what she was getting herself into. Streaming to 1500 people from a living room is like not something they teach you in divinity school. Like, this is not something she trained for. And she just always throws herself into everything so completely and so fully. So she's going to come on and share a blessing.
Yes.
Something you might know about me is that I love to bless the minor characters. And my favorite minor character in this chapter is Jim McGuffin, the weatherman.
The weatherman.
So Vernon Dursley, he's watching the news. They're talking about the owls and they go over to Jim. And he says, basically, I've got so many calls from all over the country who people telling me that they haven't gotten the rain I promised yesterday. Anyway, I can promise you that there's rain tomorrow. And I am just so charmed. And I think this is like, you know, universal weatherman characteristic. Like, you are going to make bad predictions in the world and take faulty steps. And a lot of people are going to complain. And you are going to make more predictions tomorrow. I'm someone who struggles with confidence sometimes. I think doing this show with you, Hall, has given me a lot of confidence. But I want to bless Jim for his confidence. And bless myself to have the confidence of a weatherman.
Yeah, I love that. Because it's just like, now he's going to predict the next day, there'll be more owl flight and cascades of fireworks based on just the last 24 hours.
Well, it's just funny that he like just got it wrong. And he's like, but I promised tonight. It's like, you promised yesterday, dude. Stop promising. That's what percentages are for. 92%.
We talked a little bit about Hagrid, but I want to offer my blessing to him because there's this very sweet moment where we get to imagine this moment where he's picking up little baby Harry.
Yeah.
And the text tells us there's probably this whiskery, scratchy kiss that he would have offered this little child.
Yeah.
And that he's crying. And I just, you know, I love that we've chosen him as our patron saint of transitions. And I also feel like he would be a great patron saint of like showing your emotions. And
yeah.
He's just, I don't know. I think he's a real model for like feeling what you feel, you know, when you have the feeling, and then I don't always let myself feel the feeling.
Yeah.
And I think Hagrid really does. And so I want to bless him for that. Yeah. Like, he's able to voice the sadness and the pain and the longing throughout his whole life. And I'm so glad that he gets to look after Harry, not just now, but later. And then even, you know, in this, what we think is Harry's final moments, right? He's still there. So yeah, a blessing for Hagrid for that faithfulness and just love. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
How about you?
You are Hagrid-ish. Really? In many ways.
Is it the voice? Grr.
It's the fact that your feet are as big as small dolphins, baby dolphins. I want to bless Minerva McGonagall. I want to bless her because in this moment, I really do love Dumbledore. And I think that I do see a lot of my flaws in Dumbledore's flaws. But in this moment, she's like reporting to a bad manager who's not hearing her. And I want to bless her because there's just so many times in our lives where we know what's right and we are powerless to change it. And McGonagall still just does her best. She sits on that wall and she does everything that she can for Harry for the years that she can. And so I want to bless her for always trying her absolute best and for that frustration, because I just picture her going back to Hogwarts that night and being so mad that she let it happen. But she's just a fighter and such a gift to us all. And I also want to bless you. I've really been thinking about it. So like, it's you and Peter and like, that's it. I think, and my mom for giving birth to me, of like the people who've changed my life the most. You came into my life and my life changed for the better. And you just bring this energy and this love and this innovation and this not weatherman confidence, but his confidence and excitement. And it is so infectious that it took over my life and gave me this gift. It's a blessing for me. I want to bless you for being someone who comes in and changes lives and changes the world. You are in and of itself a gift to the world, but then you are a gift to so many of us as well. And then I want to offer a blessing to you all. I want to bless you for two things. One is for letting us into your lives. you all have just been so open-hearted to us and have literally offered us like your couches and have made us hats and cookies and food and have made space for us in your living rooms right now and in your plans to come to live events and in your ears. Mm-hmm. And you've just been open to letting this really weird idea into your lives. And I also want to bless you for your generosity in teaching us. You have allowed us to take big swings because we always try to do things with intention, but we know that if we mess up, that you will graciously correct us. It's such a rare gift that you have given us. So I just want to thank you for being just the best community, the way that you've raised $10,000 in mutual aid for one another, that you've raised money for IASIS, that you've gone to each other's weddings and become roommates. And you have just like completely blown us away in teaching us what a community is. So thank you.
Yeah. I remember when we first realized that 1,000 people had listened to the first episode.
I know.
In June
1,400 are here.
Yes, in June of 2016. And when that number shot through the roof in August of that year, and more of you have joined. I mean, some of you started listening at the beginning of the pandemic and have raced through all the episodes. It's just been incredible how I feel like our community keeps growing and how welcoming everyone is. You listened while you drove to work, while you sat in the bath, while you were going on holiday with your family, talking with your kids about the show, while you were volunteering far away from home and missing the people who loved you, maybe while you were looking after a dying parent or going through a diagnosis yourself. We've been let into your lives, as Vanessa said, in the most intimate moments and the moments when things felt hardest. And I'm so grateful that you trusted us to talk with you, because I know that you talk back to us, that we got to be there with you. You've shared your stories with us. You've helped us understand the text better through your experiences. You've told so many beautiful stories about your lives that we've gotten to read in the inbox and listen to with your voicemails. Stories of loss and of hope, of trial and survival, and of new beginnings and healing, and always stories of love. And then those very special times when we got to be together, you showed up at live shows in ways that I have never been hugged so many times in 1 hour, and I never wanted it to end. You showed up in so many ways. You showed up at the summer camp that we did last summer when we really needed you to show up. You showed up at pilgrimages and meetups and at local groups. You sang sad sailor songs with me, which makes me so happy. You showed up in our fundraisers, like Vanessa was saying, for immigration justice and Black Lives Matter. You supported the trans community and non-binary people in this last few years, which was so hard for us as a Harry Potter loving community. And I have been so proud of the way in which we had difficult conversations, the way we listened to people who are directly affected by the hate and the transphobia from J.K. Rowling. And I was really worried. Like, do I want to walk around with a t-shirt saying Harry Potter is a sacred text? And honestly, because of you, I feel like I can do that. And I'm so grateful for that. You showed up at those local groups, more than 100 of them exist, and many other informal conversations, each one with a better name than the last. And I love reading out each of those every time on the show. You took inspiration from the sacred reading practices and created new ways to engage text in the classroom and in libraries and in your family. You took courage and worked hard at being a parent, at looking after your friends, at resolving conflict with siblings or other loved ones. And you took care of each other and of your neighbors. You served in your local community. So I want to thank you for trusting me with these texts. I am imperfect and I've read them imperfectly, and I hope I've done our community justice and you've helped me to learn when I haven't. Thank you for helping me discover my gifts, like Vanessa and Ariana were saying. You have been so kind to me, offering words of encouragement and praise and advice. Thank you for giving me hope. These last few years have been super hard, and it's been such a joy for me to be able to turn to you and listen to you and learn from you, and that we can find ways of being together, even in this very, very different world that we're in, to feel each other close and present, even if it's from physically far away. So as we say goodbye, know that these 5 years together have been truly magical, that I am so proud to have been a leader of this community, and that I hope you'll join Vanessa and I in our new adventure with Ariana at The Real Question, because we're having a lot of fun, and that you will welcome Matt, as you did tonight, who is a wise and super smart and loving reader, and a teacher I always turn to when I'm stuck with something, and who will be the perfect co-host in this next chapter of the show. And more than anything, just know that I am so full of love and gratitude for each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming, and thank you to Sixth and I for having us. This was Casper's last episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. We are a Not Sorry production. Our executive producer is Ariana Nettleman. We're edited this week by Juliana Broadley, and our music is by Nick Bull and Jeff Etman. We are distributed by Acast.
And a huge thanks to Matt Potts for being here this evening and for being our new co-host of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, back with you in 2 weeks' time as ever. Thanks to Molly Baxter, to Julia Argy, to Nikki Zoltan, Vanessa's lovely mom, and Megan Kelly, who's been here on social this evening, Stephanie Pulsell, and all of you. I'm Casper Ter Kuile.
I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And you've been watching Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, the live show! And this will be another moment of forgiveness, because for some reason, my thank you note is not on my script, but is on my bed. So I'm going to go get that. Or Ariana's going to go get it. Like, I came to the end of my thing. I was like, oh no. It's like the night of 1,000 mishaps. And yet we are sailing through it together.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.